Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Ask Tall Paul radio show on Blog Talk Radio Network. Today, we have our good friend, Joey D'Elia, and we're going to be talking about going green, understanding the permaculture zones. Joey, welcome.
Hello.
How have you been?
Well, I've been doing really well. I'm missing my children and my wife. They went to visit her parents in Hawaii on Oahu, and they've been gone 1 week, and they're going to be gone another week, and I'm missing them. But other than that, everything is going very nicely.
Yes. So you're in the. Are you having permaculture fun these days?
I even, and you know what's crazy? I'm starting to have permaculture fun even when I'm at work. And I have nice work. I work with trees. I'm an arborist. But I start thinking about permaculture, and then I start having even more fun because I'm just thinking about the fun I'm going to have when I get home. Or I redesign the houses I'm working at. I start having permaculture fun with these places that I'm working and thinking about the swales I could build, how I could take their rain gutters and fill up stuff, I have a lot of permaculture fun.
All right. Now, I really think that's what we're kind of doing here, is we're helping people to build an awareness, and as you start to get invested in it and you spend time, you really can't stop thinking about it. It becomes a way of life. Isn't that what you would say?
I would definitely say that, and it's part of the idea, because you're going to start observing and you start thinking about ways to save energy in total different ways that you may have thought, oh, well, I just won't drive as far. No, now we're talking about saving energy in the form of water, or in the form of the sun, or energy in the form of the wind, you start really kind of becoming really conscious of all the little things around you and how you can put them into your human like habitat, you know, where you live and stuff.
Exactly. And today we're going to be talking about these permaculture zones. So typically we think of about it the site that you're looking at, but it's not only that. It's when I think of it culturally, like we have our zone right here where we're living, where we have our local community on site. But also we have extended zones, you know, with like in our city this week we had a Permaculture San Marcos meeting. And again, we come together, and that's like a different type of zone. And then to the broader community in San Diego, et cetera. So it seems like no matter where I go, I'm talking about permaculture, and I'm so excited. And, you know, I don't work hands-on with the trees and things like you do. On a daily basis, but it's building an awareness. Like I had this teacher from third grade, sixth grade, and eighth grade, the same teacher. She called me to wish me a happy birthday, and I talked to her about permaculture. So, I mean, it's wonderful to be able to, you know, share this with everyone, and I hope that the people who are listening can share this episode and other episodes on their Facebook and get the word out. We really want to, you know, start to build an awareness and a community around what we're talking about. And that way, as we do that, we begin to truly make a difference. It's one thing to do it where you have control over in your own environment, but when you can start to influence, it just becomes like a, you know, like an infection, but in a good way. It spreads and spreads. We're planting seeds everywhere in people's minds. All right, Joey, let's talk about zones. Joey.
Well, I think zones, well.
When, yeah, it's helpful if you unmute the mic.
Well, No. I had the mic. I didn't want to disturb the audience with the sound of my dad's grinder, because in this zone one,
yeah,
which is the when you think about zone one, you have the concentration of energy. And right now in this zone one where I'm sitting, my dad's working, my friend's here helping, and all the energy is concentrated right now. He wants to run the grinder and cut nails and in zone one. Uh-huh. But we're all in zone one because that's an area of energy concentration. Doesn't mean it's the house sometimes. It could be like a park could have a zone one because it's where people congregate and they're kind of active there. There could be something to do. A fountain in the center of a park would be a zone one idea. But in our human habitation, like where we live and stuff, the typically, almost always, zone one, or let's say zone zero, is the house. Is where you cook, clean, shower, eat, sleep. That's your like zone zero. That's your center of energy. And part of zone, looking at zone, it's where you start. When you're looking at permaculture design for building a house, for instance, or your house in general, is how is it to live in? How, like, does it take advantage of the heat and of the sun in the winter, or does it take advantage of the breezes that blow, the cool breezes that blow from somewhere and cool down the house in the summer? Is it too big? Is it hard to heat? Is it hard to cool because the structure is too massive? And when we start designing, you know, and going green, and we're looking at permaculture design and using permaculture design as our method of going green, then you have your focus begin at the zones, and zone zero is that house. Good house design, the way the roof is, can you put vines in certain areas to provide shade, what materials, if you're going to build a new house, you know, what materials can you build out of that can store energy and do a bunch of and do different things. I mean, the one example is putting up dual pane windows instead of, you know, single pane windows. Some places you have to put up dual pane now, but you're looking at all the different things that go on in there in that zone zero as part of your design. Once you kind of think about all that, then you move out. And sometimes you can think of it as concentric rings, though zones aren't always like a circle. You know, your house is obviously a square most of the time. But you can think of it that's how I'm going to describe it. Right? Zone zero is that first circle, the little inner circle where we're all doing most of our stuff. Then around that is another circle, which is your zone one. And what do we have around here? What would we, like around here, Paul, what's zone
one? Well, I think we have multiple zone ones.
We do, huh?
Joey lives in one part of the land. I live in a completely different part of the land. Now, it's not too far, but my zone one is different than his zone one. And my zone zero is also different. So, like, I would consider, I mean, it's hard because people can't see it, but, like, Raul's area, to me, is definitely not zone one. Because I might only go there once a week over on that. Joey, can you adjust your microphone? We can hear you breathing. You know, so for me, my zone one is a little different map than yours would be. Because you're very active, right?
Sure.
In your zones, yeah. So an example is, like, I park my car in a certain spot. So when I enter into our site, that would be, like, a part of my zone one because that's something I go to daily or multiple times a day. And then from there, I go into my front door. And that path that I would take, since it's a common, you know, daily occurrence, anything in that area, it's just something that I go through on a regular basis.
Yeah, and when you, zone one, when we're designing, we look at that zone one and we think about the what would go on in there. And lots of times there are, what we put in zone one are things that we would want to continually kind of observe, or what we'd want to, you know, keep our eye on a lot of times, because to watch the, for instance, if you had a
animals,
or if you had, let's get personal here. What if you had a plant that your great grandmother gave to, you know, and it's been passed down? Well, and your job has become to take care of that plant. Well, ideally, if that plant was an outdoor plant, you would put it probably by, this is what I would do. I'd put it in zone one next to the front door.
Yes.
Where I walk through all the time so I can, because now I've been given the great responsibility of making sure this plant survives to the next generation. I would put it somewhere where I can continually watch it.
Yeah, like if you have a dog or an animal that you need to feed, you're not going to put it all the way at the other thing. You want to make sure that it's nearby so that you make sure that it has water. Because what if they run out of water and you didn't know it?
Well, and then exactly, and that's why part of the zone one planning can be also where you have things that you're going to visit a lot, which
yeah.
Things, working stations where you may work a lot, maybe a planting, you know, a potting table or a workbench, these types of things, or the chickens.
Yeah, the chickens to gather the eggs.
Your herb gardens, you know, kitchen gardens, things where if you're going to implement a garden, then ideally the closest to the kitchen, you know, access to it so you can gather things, especially fresh herbs, get those as close as you can. Grab those fresh herbs. You can cook with those. Those would be something in zone one. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, within 20, 30 feet
right.
of the center of zone one, zone zero, or your house is kind of that ideal area. It does change. If, for instance, let's say there was a steep slope, like there kind of is at our house, well, 10 feet from the side of the main house is a very steep embankment. Well, zone one ends right at the bottom of that embankment. We don't climb up the embankment, even though it's within 20, 30 feet of the house. That once the energy it takes to climb up and down the steep bank to like take care of things or visit it becomes, once the energy becomes too much to work that area, then it falls into an outer zone. That's one instance of it not being within that like concentric ring kind of form, all even spacing. They do change to the topography or the levels of the landscape around you. Sometimes you can, rainwater catchment is good to put around the house, you know, close to the house, and you can use it and you can monitor it and make sure it's all, you know, working well. Trees, intense, like if you're going to do any kind of intensive planting that needs, you know, some kind of more maintenance, needs some continual maintenance, then you're going to put those close to the house. And the something in that way, I think
a lot of it has to do with like conservation of energy. So because these are things I'm going to need more often than others, you're going to, whatever you need on a regular basis, you need to put closer to you, as opposed to other things like, let's say, at a peach tree where peaches only come in once a year, you don't need that right next to your front door because only once a year is something you're going to need. So you'd put that out in a different zone. So like strawberries, if you had strawberries really far away from your house, you may never know when they're ripe, but if you had them close, like at my last house, I'd have them in my front yard so I could walk by and just see, oh, the strawberries are red, it's time to pick them.
Well, yeah, I think that's a perfect example. And I'm thinking of, you're going to have your gardens that you want to visit a lot. And so, like you said about energy, there's also, when you have because lots of times it's common to have vegetable gardens far away from the house for some reason. They make a box and they put it at quite a distance away, and then you're left to walk there, expend energy to go visit it. You can't see it necessarily all the time from the window or from your house, and it can get neglected. And when you're looking at it in a permaculture design, you want to work with that energy efficiency, and you want to get your growing systems, let's say your food systems, close to you so you can become an integral part of them. Because, you know, you're not going to live with them inside the house. Well, you could. They do design things where there's more food production inside some of the houses. But the closer you can get some of those different elements, the more of a pattern it becomes. And I mean by pattern is you walk out one door, then you walk into the garden, and say the garden leads into the trees, and then the tree, the like little tiny orchard system or something, leads into the chicken area, and you get some eggs, and sometimes you can make a circle or a roundabout way and visit these little sites and conduct a few different tasks at all with one kind of circle motion around your house or through one door of your house, out one door of your house, through a different vegetable garden system, into a little tree system, fruit tree system, food forest system, into a chicken system, and then into the system maybe where your kids are playing, the little play area where the kids are, you know, sitting. Or you can put their playground area near the veggie garden, so you can be in the veggie garden and you can see the kids. What I'm really talking about too is when you're designing permaculturally, you're using permaculture design methods like these zone planning to really lay out the things you're going to visit a lot in relationship to the center of energy and to things you're going to visit a lot or that you're very interested in.
Yeah, like one of the wonderful things that you've done, or I don't know if it's you or Raoul, but one of the things we talk about is stacking functions. So there's a raised bed that they created for lettuce because the little critters, the gophers and the ground squirrels, were eating the lettuce, so they had to get it up off the ground. And so, but the lettuce needs shade, so they built this beautiful just shade structure over it. Well, someone had a great idea. Let's put some chairs out here. So here's this function of this shade structure protecting the lettuce so it doesn't get overheated in the summer. And then underneath that, we have chairs for the humans to enjoy it and sit and congregate. And you're sitting right in the garden, and it's a center of energy, and it's multiple purpose. And you could actually work there. Let's say you wanted to, you know, sort seeds, or, you know, you could, there's many things you could do sitting there, and it's, I love it. Whoever came up with that, I think it was Raoul, wasn't it?
It was Raoul said, this would be a nice place to sit. And I said, there's a bunch of furniture where we don't sit anymore, like outdoor furniture. So bring that stuff up. That's a great idea. And what's cool too is you said seed sorting. Well, I just set a bunch of old vetch plants near one of the chairs over there in a little container. And as you go over there and sit, there is some seed pods to get the seeds out of and take them off the plants. So you were already
And I didn't know that, but
you didn't.
But I was thinking about that, you know. And
well, I've got the work all laid out for you. You can sit in the shade and get right to it.
Joey knows my strong point. I know how to sit. But So the other thing is that, you know, it's hot where we live, but underneath
True.
That shade structure, I would say, wouldn't you say it cools at least 10 to 15 degrees? I mean,
it's got to, because I was just out there today.
Yeah.
And it was hot out
yeah.
there. And I got under there just to see. I go, it can't be that much cooler under there, even though I've been under there and it has been. But it's just funny how my mind works sometimes. So I went under there and I was like, instant relief.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, gosh, I got to get more of this stuff going on around here.
And another thing, this is kind of it's all related to this design function is, you know, in the forest, we always say, you know, mimic after the forest. And in the forest, you have dappled shade. This shade structure isn't pure shade. It's just palm fronds that are reused. So it's a reuse of the surplus. And it has dappled shade, so that this lettuce still gets light. It was completely free to create the structure because you have bamboo poles laying around. You have this old palm fronds. And it just has served so many purposes. And, you know.
I got a little funny thing to say. Like it was beyond free in a way.
Uh-huh.
I'll have to tell it. Maybe it's a kind of well, because I actually went to
you
somebody.
Stole?
No. Even crazier than that, I got paid.
Yeah, to take it away.
To cut those fronds off of trees and to cut that bamboo thin a stand of bamboo down. So I harvested those things, and they paid me, and then I brought them home, and then we built the shade structure with them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that you could design that, too.
Yes.
You could decide to take a career in some way, whatever it be, even if it's not bamboo doing, you know, or whatever I'm doing, but you could kind of come up with that design where, wait a second, I like to do a lot of something and I want to use it somewhere, whatever it may be. You let your imagination go and you can have some fun that way and maybe even design yourself a new career or explore a new career where you're doing more of what you wanted to do and you're able to use the surplus from, you know, your job to you know,
right.
Work into your system.
Well, and also, we've been talking about Zone 1. So all this wonderful stuff is happening in Zone 1. It's the kitchen garden, which is right outside the main kitchen. And so it can be multifunctional. It's not just growing food, but it can be a center for, you know, for people and for... You know, all kinds of things.
Well, your worm bin systems, your
yes.
vermicomposting, or some of your composting, your small composting systems, can be in that area. Those kinds of waste recycling systems, even your gray water systems, are going to be an integral part of your Zone 1. You have some water. You might have some water features for that pleasant little effect and little ponds to enjoy.
Now,
but yeah,
you were talking about this creating a path, or like we're kind of creatures of habit. So if you look at your own patterns of what you do each day, you might see that every day you walk out to a certain area. Well, that would be part of your Zone 1. Or let's say you have a building out on your land and, you know, you go there every day and that's your office. So your home would be your Zone 0. Your office could be your Zone 0. But in between, you go walk this path. And there's a great video everyone must watch. I mean, it's not even watch. You should own it and you should share it with all of your friends. Joey, what is the name of that exact video? It's Introduction to Permaculture?
Intro to Permaculture Design.
Okay.
By
Jeff
yeah.
Lawton.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. He has a whole series of videos which talk about these different components within permaculture design. So water harvesting and creating soil and other things. I'll try to get links for you if I can. But otherwise, just look it up on the web. And he has a great visual where he has the house and he has like the chicken coop, and he has, you know, all these different things around the house.
All the things we've been talking about, and he has they have little, you know, animated in a sense drawings of a person's path going through and all the visits. And part of that Zen when planning, and when you get more technical, and if you want to get really into this, and you get a book by Bill Mollison, which is The Permaculture, A Designer's Manual, and it really breaks it down, because when we're talking about Zone 1 planning, you can even start to take, you know, get your paper and pen out and start to note how many visits you would make to a certain area, and sometimes that can dictate where it is in relationship to Zone 0. You know, you can get very detailed with it and really help your mind go through a process of determining where to place things and what would that be Zone 1, or would it not be Zone 2-1, and possibly would it fall into Zone 2? Which?
All right, I think it's time.
I think it's time.
Bring it on us, Joey.
All right, Zone 2. That would be, you know, that next concentric kind of circle. You would have possibly, you'd have your tree, your food forest systems would be bigger. You might have some like major water harvesting type systems, swales, maybe key lime mounds, maybe out in this Zone 2 area. You would have more like milk cows or goats, or even if you had a lot of poultry. Because once you start to get a lot of chickens, they can get kind of smelly sometimes, depending on how they're kept. And you definitely don't want to, if you did put that in Zone 2, or it does go in Zone 2, you definitely don't want it in an area where the wind blows and then it goes to the house. But that's something to think about too when you're designing some of these zones. But you would have, you know, you could have small ponds, some larger hedges, let's see, maybe like a workshop.
Yeah.
It might be in Zone 1.
Beehives.
Oh, beehives.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, what you could do, your main crop beds would be a zone two, where, for instance, that's what's happening with us. When we go out from the house, you have the kitchen gardens. Well, slowly the kitchen gardens get a little bit vaguer, but then they are transitioning now into the main crop, which will just be planted and basically do its own thing for a while, and then we'll go harvest it. It's not like a bunch of things that need to be picked continually, like zucchinis or tomatoes.
So examples of main crops would be?
Well, for us, main crop for us would be potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So just like a lot of different potatoes and sweet potatoes, and I'll probably put sunflowers in with those. You don't need to go out and tend sunflowers all the time. They're going to grow their big heads, and then you go get the heads with all the seeds in them. It's definitely not like a tomato plant, not like a zucchini plant, not like a lettuce or kale or chard, something you're gathering more constantly, and it's, you know, it keeps producing like that. Those kind of crops you can move out into Zone 2, the ones where it's like a one-time kind of harvest. An annual harvest. That's what I think about a lot. In Zone 2, I think if you're going to build some kind of like trellis structures, and they're larger, they would go out there. Possibly, I mean, your well Lots of times the well is can be quite a distance from the house sometimes. Bigger pond, if you have the ability to capture a lot of water to have a pond, anything big like that tends to be
like
out in zone two.
Even with fish in it, yeah.
Right. But it is nice to try to sometimes you can integrate a larger pond into zone one.
Mm-hmm.
And have it be part of that space, which is great if you can do that. But if you're going to have a lot, most likely when you have a property with a lot of rain and you have a lot of ponds, they're nowhere, they can't physically be in zone one just from the amount of space that they take up.
So in the video of Jeff's place at Zaytuna Farms, or,
mm-hmm.
yeah, there's that pond and it's very close to the house. I know he has several different ponds, doesn't he? But the pond near the house, what do they do? What type of functions does that pond serve?
Well, that pond functions as like a solar gain, like in the winter and whatnot. It absorbs a lot of heat and keeps that area warmer. It's a very aesthetical pond.
Right.
Where it's very planted to be gorgeous,
yeah,
and have food in it at the same time along the edges.
I think they had taro and a lot of...
Yeah, going into it. And then the part of it is that the pond was sited and the house was, we're going to put the house next to this pond because of the potential for that pond to be gorgeous. And what it really serves, that it has fish in it, and you can fish actually in it and get some fish, but it's the best swimming pond. When I was there, I was swimming it every day, and it's right next to your house, and it gets hot and humid there, over there in New South Wales, up in the north of
Could you touch the ground on that when you're in there, or is it
not? Well, you'd have to swim down. It's pretty deep.
It's deep, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think I didn't touch the bottom ever, but it's the lotus, there's a bunch of lotus flowers in it, and lotus only grow out so far into the pond because their roots can only grow down about 8 feet until they touch the soil on the bottom of the pond. So there was a giant portion of the pond that's deeper than 8 feet.
Uh-huh.
It goes quite a ways down because you can kind of get an idea also because you can go on the other side of the dam wall and see the actual size of that wall. And it's deep, but it provides that moderation of climate around the house because of the volume of water. In the summer, it keeps things cool, and then in the winter, it can keep things warmer. It moderates.
And that's an example of a kind of a structure. It's a water feature, but it's both zone one and zone two. So on the one edge where it's near the house, people congregate, they meet, they might even fish. But on the other side, they might not visit it as often.
You're right.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. On the other side of that pond there's a food forest. And you can't just, like, walk out of the house into that food forest. So you have to go around the pond or swim through it and go visit that food forest. So, yes, it definitely is that, like, half and half element. But it's really there to be gorgeous. And it does that so well, and everything else we talked about. Let's think about, because this is part of permaculture design too, is like we can keep exploring it, and it's pretty much infinite. You can keep, even though you can be experienced and have done this a lot, you can sit for a little bit and ponder and you can have a new idea or a new realization of something that would be considered zone two, maybe not for everybody. Like, I guess zone two, let's say you like tennis. If you did have a tennis court, they're definitely not in zone one. Most tennis courts are in more of a would be in zone two, or basketball court. some driveways, though, if we're more urban, kind of suburban, your driveway, your basketball court would be in zone kind of one.
Right.
Type of thing. And then you definitely your garage and where you park your car is zone. Our car parking here is more zone two. See, now this is a difference. I chose to keep the cars away from the house, from the structures. Paul parks the closest because of the way his setup is. But the rest of the vehicles are more in zone, actually in zone two a bit. It's not, I mean, I'm not talking about, we have to walk very, very far, but I wanted to create more of a garden forest path kind of feeling going into the structures than being able to drive up right to them.
It's like a buffer. It's a safety zone and a sanctuary, really. Because zone one you want to keep as private, and it's really where there's a lot of life going on. And zone two, I mean, there's life going on, but it's like not as much activity. Zone one, there's a lot of activity always.
Yeah. And then greenhouses.
Yeah.
If greenhouses would be a zone two, for sure.
Maybe compost piles, but maybe the bigger ones.
Some bigger compost piles. That milk shed, like say you're milking, would be on the border of one and two, zone one and two, if you were gonna do something like that. And sometimes that's too, when you're looking at the zone planning, if you're having a lot of poultry, a lot of chickens or something, they are on the edge of one and part of two, so that you can have good access to like where the chickens are roosting and laying their eggs is right on the border of one and two, but then most of their free range area is zone, you know, their free range area is zone two,
right?
But they're right on the edge of zone one, and that creates an easier system to actually maintain, meaning gather their eggs and just check on them and make sure they're having water and they're doing okay. And you can apply that to a lot of the different, whether it's some other kinds of, like the main crop area is right on that edge. The rest of it in zone two, but right on the edge is it connects to zone one. Even your goats or your cattle, they can come up right on that edge.
Let me ask this, and the chickens might be an interesting indicator. How far have you seen your chickens go? Have they only stayed within zone one and two, or have they actually ventured out to zone three?
We haven't
talked about yet.
Yeah, they have.
They have. So,
and when they decided to do that,
mm-hmm.
that's when the coyotes got them.
Ah, because maybe it's a good transition to talk about zone three, but the chickens might be a good indicator, like how far is safe or like how far is zone two. Because zone two is still close to where the activity is, but it's not so far away that, you know, it's something that you only visit on even less occasions.
Yeah, zone three, you know, if we get starting to go into zone three, you can there's like you start, we're, let's say, I mean, some of this has to do with, I mean, there's looking at it in a suburban setting.
Yeah.
And looking at it in more of like, this is a 2.5 acre parcel. And then there, you know, then there's 100 acre parcels, but those are kind of similar to 2.5 acre parcel because you only get so far away from the house on when you start having acreage. But in a suburb, I want to push it a little bit in my mind because I don't live in a suburban setting anymore. We used to, and we used to pack it all in there.
Think of my house, which you're familiar with. You know, I had my front door, I had my driveway. So going from my driveway to my front door, you walk through zone one, which is where ideally you would have herbs and, yeah, go on.
Well, there's a consideration with your house, which I think is, is something that's important in a suburban setting. Traditionally, most of the time in a suburban setting, people park, drive up, push the door opener.
Yeah.
The door opens, they drive the car in, and then go from a door inside the garage into the house.
Right. They never... But I would park outside in
the
driveway.
You would park outside and be forced, basically, to either go around the gate into the back door or go. What you would do is go through the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And already, basically, because of our car culture, we go places in the car quite often. Let's say you're not going to drive in the garage and park. If you're going to park out front, you would be walking to the front door, and that is like the most zone one I kind of feel, because you're going to be able, you're going to be seeing that so much.
Yeah.
You frequented the front yard more than your backyard.
That's right. That's kind of like my zone two, although zone two is traditionally where you plant your fruit trees. Which I have a wall, which is, well, I have fruit trees in my front in my zone one.
But what was interesting is, so then it was something important. Your trees that you had in zone one in your front yard were your mulberries and your figs, right near the thing, and those are a constant kind of picker. Well, the mulberry is, especially the Persian mulberry you had.
Yeah.
The
And figs, too. I mean, they could go for a month or more. You could,
right. And those are right near your path. You could physically reach over after you get out of your car, basically, and pick those and actually see when they're at their prime.
Yeah.
And then what's interesting, too, is when we start to talk about your you could see everything in your front yard just from walking up to the front door. And I mean everything.
100%. Strawberries and the... Everything.
Apples, the guava, the strawberries on the ground, the avocado, and then sometimes you used to plant
cabbage and
around the avocado. You could see when those were ready.
Yeah,
and you even had a little ornamental lawn around that too, and so you had the whole a regular but beautiful fruit filled front yard with the little grass area.
No one actually knew it was a food forest. it was a food forest, but it looks like a yard. Like a standard home
with
a
little
nice lawn.
Even a little white picket fence.
White picket fence.
It's true, until I stripped him away from his comfortable life.
Yeah. But in my front yard, and this is a tiny, tiny front yard, I had over 16 different varieties of fruit.
And a little lawn to say that. What do you think the size of that was? Was 30 by 20?
I don't know anything about size. I don't know.
I think it was. That's it. Yeah.
I have trees, like apples on espalier, which means you grow them on a fence, so they don't take up a lot of room. They're two-dimensional rather than a three-dimensional tree. And really, in the urban setting, you can do so much, but we're talking about zones.
And then that's where we fall into this backyard. So when he would go rarely, but he would go, because a lot in that, Paul was talking about a wall he has. Well, what happens is you go out into his backyard and there's a lot of hardscape, but then there's a wall, and right under that wall,
in front of it
was
food.
Food, all tomatoes, and that's a zone one plant in the way that it was there, because he would just go out and pick those tomatoes
and peppers.
You could see that whole area too when he was washing dishes.
Yes.
In the sink, he would look out the window and he could see those. Now, but then right over that wall would fall into zone two.
Yeah.
Because now you had to go around this one way to get behind the wall, and then the slope became very steep at that point.
Yeah. Technically, that right in back of my kitchen, that would be my kitchen garden, because that's where I would grow, quick edibles. But on the other side of the wall, I actually had another vegetable garden which grew the majority of the vegetables. But I must admit, because it was zone two, or maybe even zone three, it was neglected because I didn't visit it as often because of this barrier of the wall. I mean, it's literally, we're talking how far, Joey, like
well,
15 feet, 15 feet. It's nothing.
Sometimes it's not. I mean, that's why I'm focusing on the suburban setting because there are these, it's interesting because I even remember growing up in our suburban house and there were certain areas that we just did, even though the yard wasn't, you know, wasn't in that big, you just, for some reason, you didn't just go down to the one corner very often on this one side. Or sometimes there's the way the houses are shaped, there's a thin, smaller corridor on the sides that you don't really go to. You may go out the sliding glass door to the patio area and then the surrounding vegetation surrounding that patio area, but you rarely go down the side of the house. Usually the trash cans are there and you may throw something away, but you don't visit that often, and you can't see it usually. And so it doesn't get, even though it's within 10 feet of the house itself, it's right in 10 feet of the zone, it's not visited.
I think what an interesting thing about that is perhaps, like, every place I've lived, the places that were in shade were not visited very often. I think where the sunlight is, people tend to go to more often, maybe? I don't know.
Well, it depends on if it's hot.
Yeah, that's true.
So, in this way of thinking, when we look at, we could say zone one in a suburban setting was somewhere you pass by often. If you park in the garage and you walk into the house, well, then your zone one may be, you know, near where you look out of the sliding glass door because it's out to this patio area, and that's more your zone one and not your front yard because you never really walk out the front door unless you're going to go get the mail. Your front yard might be your zone two.
Yeah.
And your backyard is actually your zone one, which oftentimes happens. People usually spend most of their time in their backyard and not their front yard. And your front yard could be more your zone two in most settings, not in yours, Paul, but lots of times. And then so you could plant more of the trees and garden beds in your backyard that you see from the windows, because lots of times they orientate the kitchen and some of the living rooms in the back facing, looking out to the backyard. And so you could incorporate that as the zone one and plant accordingly or plan accordingly. You have your little chicken coop close, you know, in your yard and you have a couple chickens in there. And your zone three, I think we talked, I mean, your house had the steep slope, so a lot of suburban houses are cut into the side of these hills, and you have these steep backyards, whether it's going downhill or uphill. Well, immediately you hit that steepness, that changes the zone. Even if that steepness is 10 feet away from your house, it changes the energy it takes to go up and down that hill to do anything with it or on it. So that's zone two, and then you can easily move as some of the steepness gets to a zone three, where at the very top of some of these backyards that are steep but not like extremely large, you're not going to the top. So you would plant accordingly, maybe some trees that you only visit once a year, or you don't visit at all. They're just for being at the top of the hill and dropping tons of leaf and mulch and having pretty flowers on them and doing nice stuff with the soil to kind of create a nutrient flow down the backyard. And, you know, sometimes you don't have a zone four in a suburban setting. And you may have a zone five because some nowadays, lots of times they'll take a suburban houses. Well, this, like you, Paul, your suburban house backed right up to an estuary, basically, a giant marsh type of thing. And that's wild.
Yeah.
Nobody goes in there and does anything to that marsh. Everything lives in its own way. That's wild. And that would, you know, that can be a zone five and used for just, you could go collect things out of there and and watch different things go on. But in some people's back houses, suburban homes back right up to forests.
Yeah.
And that's a zone 5 because it's wild.
And you could go hunting and, you know, there's...
Exploring and...
Yeah, things.
Get crafts, like little wood to make baskets or... You know, different things like that, or
now,
bare wild food.
Now, on a larger scale, though, Zone 4 is considered, is that for forestry, is it?
Well, let's look at Zone, we were talking about Zone
okay.
3.
Yeah.
And then you would start looking at on a large acreage, you would start looking at, like, maybe main crop forage for
yeah.
animals.
Right.
Growing big crops of something to feed, whether it may be hay type of stuff or fodder for goats or animals, some kind of, ideally some kind of perennial systems that keep producing fodder over years and years, and you just cut it and or you let the animals graze on it and then move them off of it. There could be storage areas, large areas to store things. Right on the edge of Zone 2 and Zone 3, maybe a giant, like, something along those lines. There's, you could do, like, a lot of different tree systems out in 3, too. You can do giant orchards. You can do, like, where you're growing a lot of cuttings. Kind of things that are later going to be grafted. You know, you could start like rootstock out in those zones, shelters for animals in the fields. You know, some different sheltering systems out there. You could do out in Zone 3 can have some major ponds, like major dams, or water storage out in there. Like some major stuff. You could grow stuff specific. Say you were going to do a lot of bees. You could use that Zone 3 to plant out like major bee forage area. Also, you could kind of specialize in that Zone 3 and do some really broad stuff in that area. So, when you think about that kind of, and a commercial area, commercial cropping area, if you're doing, you know, growing a lot of different things commercially, you're going to need a larger area. That would be a Zone 3, you know, broad scale kind of farming systems, you know, polycultural farming systems, or earthworks, once again. Can definitely be out in Zone 3, like large mainframe swales could be in there, or large like key line mound systems, even some key point dams could be in that Zone 3 potentially. A lot of maybe your key line subsoiling would be done in Zone 3 for setting up some food, some agroforestry systems, possibly. Yeah, hedgerows, like large hedgerows to control like the wind blowing over different crop areas. You'd find those out in Zone 3, the big hedgerows. So, yeah, I think that covers that zone pretty good.
Do we want to go to the next zone?
Well, we probably should.
Getting
close to our time here.
I'm just looking at the clock here.
I didn't even look at the clock. Goodness gracious. I got zoned out.
You're zoning.
Yeah. So Zone 4 gets, well, it'll go quicker because it gets more vague as you move out into these outer zones. And then Zone 4 is just, could be giant pastures and rangeland for moving cattle across, just volunteer trees growing, unpruned, farm forestry, like major farm forestry where you're growing like timber, stuff you won't be harvesting it for 50 years. Some of this timber to like, if your climate can support that, growing some timber for that. And it's a bordering area. That zone 4 borders the forest or the wilderness, which moves, you know, wilderness would be zone 5, which is just in its, you know, natural, unmanaged, just it's doing its own thing. You don't touch it except possibly to go in and hunt responsibly, gather supplies for doing some different kinds of building, wild harvesting berries and medicinals and those types of things. And so that's what that zone 5 would be. And then zone 4, it can be dams also, big dams, energy, like wind. Sometimes there's a lot of wind out in those outer zones and maybe some harvesting of energy like that, wind, or there could be a major, more of a river out in that area for some reason, maybe harvesting some of that energy. But, yeah.
Yeah, so a good idea might be to go to, you know, maps.google.com or maps.bing.com and get a satellite view of your land, and you can just start thinking about, get a bird's eye view of what your property looks like and think about, you know, what are these different zones. And then as you're planning, you just can focus. Like in the beginning, I would think, well, when I went to my house, the first thing that I put in were the fruit trees, because that was a high priority for me. I wanted my own fruit more than I wanted my own vegetables. So I put the fruit trees in, which literally takes very little work. I mean, you dig a hole, you put the tree in, and it's just a project. But that project was more important to me than growing vegetables. So then the second thing I did was start growing tomatoes. Everyone knows my story. And I planted them way in the wrong zone. It would have been like zone, you know, my wilderness. But I was successful, and it's just I later learned I had to move my tomatoes closer to where
lived. Well, that, in that case, your tomatoes were down at the bottom, then you were walking up and down all those stairs, right?
Yeah, and I don't even like tomatoes, so I had no incentive to go visit them. I don't eat tomatoes, so I really had no incentive to go down there. But, you know, once, and believe me, this is the very first year that I did any sort of gardening, not gardening, but vegetable gardening ever. I've grown roses for many, 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 many years and other types of flowers. But the first time I ever attempted to grow food were these darn tomatoes. And I really put them in the wrong spot, but I learned from it. And, you know, and that's the whole point of all of it is, if you say you're done, you've completed your design, I just think that's bull. You can always improve. You can always learn. Sometimes we make mistakes, but you know, there's great things can come from that too.
Well, yeah, and you put things in, you make a design, and you put them in, and then it evolves. Once it's happening, it evolves into a new options become available, new possibilities, and so it's. Yeah, that's the beauty of permaculture design. It's just like nature continues to differentiate and diversify and beautify. That ideally should be how your permaculture design works within your human habitat. So,
yeah,
it's a great process.
Definitely.
To start and to start incorporating into your life and everything. It's great.
Sure. Well, next week we have
a
huge, a lot of great things coming. We have our Hawaiian kahuna coming back. We have a couple of different healers. Next Thursday we have Raul Castillo, who's one of our permaculture friends here on Tipuana Farm in San Marcos. And he is going to talk to us about how permaculture has transformed his life. And I think we're all going to talk about it, actually. So we're going to be three of us next week. And
we're all going to be together?
Yeah, all three of us.
Oh, how fun. Oh, that's way more fun than just
us. I mean, we're not that fun. But with Raul, now that's...
Oh, well, I'm just going to listen the whole time because he's very exciting.
All right. Well, Anyway, to visit Joey's website, his is fruittreeforest.com. I have permaculturecentral.com and asktallpaul.com. So thank you, everyone, for listening. We'd really love for you to call in. I think the way Blog Talk Radio, they now have this, they've changed the way they do it, and I don't think people are listening the way they used to. So I don't think you're actually people logging into the chat room. But anyway, we are getting a lot of visits, a lot of listens. But as far as call-ins, anybody can call in. Just join us, and we'd love to have you on. All right. Thanks, Joey.
You're welcome. Thank you, Paul.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, bye.